Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Okay, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fucksters? What's going on? I'm Mark Maron. This is my show. This is WTF, the podcast. The podcast that's in its sixth year. God, I hope I'm not stroking out again, man. I just got to learn how to talk again. I was just on the phone for a half an hour, and I talked fine. I talked well. I talked good to the person I was talking to. I was on the phone for 45 minutes with my father the other night. That was exciting. My father enjoys when I get aggravated. That's when he starts laughing. Look at the kid. He's all worked up about something, and he chuckles. See, that's the relationship I have with my dad. Look, it's out of me, and it's in you. Good luck. Good luck with that. Go dump it in the river. So what is going on, people? We just got done with the third week of shooting Maron on IFC. It was a pretty fucking amazing week. I got to be honest with you. Let's get into present frame first. What is happening? Cameron Esposito is on the show today, and her most recent comedy album is called Same Sex Symbol. And you can get that on iTunes or anywhere you get your comedy albums. Cameron Esposito also worked on the show Maron this week. God, there's a lot of people coming through. So you all know that I'm touring, right? There was some issue with the San Francisco link, but that's all happening. Go to WTFpod.com/calendar and see where I'm coming. It's a long tour. It goes to D.C. It goes to Philly. It goes to Boston. It goes to Madison. It goes to Pittsburgh. It goes to outside Detroit, Toronto, Houston, Dallas, Seattle, Vancouver, San Fran, Asheville, North Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia, New Orleans, Louisiana, Rochester, New York. Thank you for all the suggestions for your art. Thank you for sending your art in for the tour posters. I'm selecting them now. That's happening. Okay? So this week on the show, and I think I told you I was going to work with these guys, but it's come to pass. Elliot Gould played himself. I can't give you too much about the show because this is the first episode of it, of the third season. But I worked with Elliot Gould and Alex Rocco, who is Mo Green in The Godfather. Elliot Gould played himself. Alex Rocco played another guy. And I'm doing scenes with these guys who are so ingrained in my mind. How many times have you seen The Long Goodbye? How many times have you seen MASH? How many times have you seen The Godfathers, Part 1 and 2? Mo Green. Great character actor. And I'm doing scenes with the two of these guys just sitting there going like, I cannot believe this is happening. But I'll tell you something. The scene I did with Alex Rocco, which is one of the funniest things I've ever been part of. It's going to be in the first episode of the third season of Maron. I could not keep a straight face. And I had that moment where, holy shit, this is a blast. Like, it's gotten to that point now that I'm in the third season where I feel a little more confident. I feel comfortable with acting. You know, I feel like I can let a little, I'm not freaking out as much, and I can let a little of the intensity sort of, I don't need to panic at all, but I can just sort of let the comedy happen a little easier. But this scene is a dark scene, and Rocco just went to town. And what we got out of it, I wish I could tell you more, but I'd rather just wait. I know it's a long tease, but I'd rather you wait for it until May, until when it comes out. But God, it felt great. And Lucy Davis from the original Office is playing my British manager, Olivia, but she's Emily in the show. And to work with Lucy Davis, the subtlety, and it's just working with great actors is so amazingly fun.
I just hope I hold up. I hope I am standing up to them. But I'll tell you, when you work with great actors, it makes you look a lot better. I work with Adam Goldberg also. He's in an episode. Constance Zimmer as well. But me and Goldberg did some very funny scenes. I love working with him. He feels like my brother or something. We're on the same same frequency of some kind. But it's looking good, I guess, is what I'm telling you. It's looking good. It's coming along great. I'd mentioned I did my first job as a DJ. I went over to Gimme Gimme Records. Dan relocated down on Fig into a nicer, bigger store. Asked me to DJ for an hour. I learned how to go in between the tables. So that's something I can do now. Skill. Brought my records. Went with some sort of some classics. Didn't try to impress. Didn't nerd out. Didn't do this sort of like, oh, you never heard this? That's because it's really, because only I know about that song. Didn't try to prove anything to the record nerds. Played some Petty, played some Del Fuego's, played some Joe Jackson even, played some Costello, played some MC5, played some Wilson Pickett. Mixed it up, man. Mixed it up. Cameron Esposito, who after this interview played a pretty big part on an episode of my show this season. She had a small part last season, and she Why is that word missing? She plays the same part, just bigger this time. And it was great talking to her. So let's chat now with Cameron Esposito.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Zito.
I think I'm writing a really interesting line for people. There's a prettiness to my face, and then
hot
I have the
butch.
I literally have a side mullet, and this is people.
Side mullet. People, did you make that up?
Yeah, I did. Well, I did. Yes, of course. But I like committed to this hairstyle, I think, before I realized what the hairstyle meant, mm-hmm. which is this is actually how it feels on the inside a little bit.
You did this not saying, like, I need a gay flag, so I'm going to do a side mullet.
You wouldn't believe how much this is not the gayest flag in the world.
No, there are no gay flags. Not anymore.
I mean, certainly not for women. I think, like, my fiance has, mm-hmm. like, your haircut, basically, uh-huh. and dudes still hit on her.
Yeah.
It's just a very confusing, men are very confused by lesbians because they're not sure, like, am I invited here?
Right,
what's going on here?
Me?
Yeah, exactly. Like, have they just never been asked?
Right.
Is it because they haven't been asked? Right. If I just ask them, I get both of them, right?
Right, right.
Like, I get the couple, I get to go home with the couple.
Well, there is that sort of point of view where I had an experience, like, years ago where the first woman that I really was in love with or had a real relationship with had come out of a relationship with a woman, and then after me, started another one, or years later she was with a woman, and I remember I was going to visit her. She invited me over to visit them,
yes,
you know, in Connecticut, and I'm like, maybe this is, you know, this is going to happen for me, you know, maybe.
Oh my god!
Right?
What? All yeah. right. So tell. So please tell me.
Right. So, but you know, it was one of those things where it's like, I don't know what's going on, but you know, maybe.
How did she contact you? Is this like a phone call, email?
No, it wasn't like we're going to fuck. It was like if you're, you know, I know you're in town, or if you're going to, you know, you want to come hang out with us,
right?
It was innocent.
No, I don't think it was.
It wasn't.
I am actually reading that she did not want to fuck you, not knowing anything else about this.
Course.
I don't know why that's why.
Of course.
I automatically.
But I'm just, you know, answering to, you know, what your idea of what men are thinking. Like, I thought, well, that might be interesting. I was not thinking like it was going to happen or it was about me. But I'm like, well, maybe, you know, something interesting could happen. And then, you know, when they pulled up in her girlfriend's truck. It was like right away, I'm like, oh, this is not. It
right,
has nothing
sure.
to do with me.
Bisexuality doesn't mean all at once.
No.
Necessarily.
It's just not going to. This has nothing to do with me.
I think that if men actually got what they wanted, you know, like in terms of there's a really heightened. Well, there's a sexualization of lesbian sexuality because I think it's men's way of feeling included, right? So it's like,
well, there's sex,
if
there's,
I'm into this, right, then I'm not excluded from this.
But also, but there's also the representation of lesbian sex for men.
Right, that's exactly what I'm saying. Right, like, if I can be into this, right, then it's still about me, even though I'm not there.
Exactly.
Like, it's still,
even though
it's
it has
still
nothing,
my thing.
Even
yeah,
though it's completely contrived.
Yes.
It, you know, they make it for men.
Right.
You know, like, there's some idea that men are like, you know, two chicks, huh? That'd be amazing.
And
it's
if
like,
they actually saw what two chicks do together,
they'd be like, oh my God.
Dudes would be like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. This is overwhelming. They are pleasing each other in a way that I do not understand because they have the same parts.
Yeah, it seems so hard and fast.
It is very hard and fast. It's a lot less light tapping.
No,
you know?
Delicate. Yeah. No, there's a lot of digging.
Yeah, it's rubbing. It's very diggy. That's it. You are familiar with real lesbian sexuality,
sure,
Mark. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I do a bit on stage about, like, the first time you actually see a woman masturbate in front of you, you're like, oh my God, that thing can take a beating.
Well, I do a bit about dudes not understanding lesbian porn because they're seeing, like, these two women that are clearly not lesbians.
Right.
And it's not just the stuff that they're doing together. It's like the whole aesthetic,
right,
is hysterical how far apart that is.
Right.
And I know that that is also true because, you know, I still go in for parts here in LA.
For lesbian porn parts?
Well, yeah, I go in for lesbian porn parts. By that, I mean the parts
like
of a woman.
Too real.
By that, I mean
too
that.
Real.
No, I'll go in for, like, an audition to play a lesbian. Actually, I played a lesbian in your show.
You did for a little bit.
But, I go in for parts to play lesbian and then it'll go to like a Playboy bunny or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they're just like, yeah, we want to include you in this, but like technically, like this is too much.
We're,
like,
we're mainstream.
You're too much.
Right. Too much lesbian.
I should lead with my long side is my point.
Which is
kind of shimmy into the room right side first.
But you don't seem upset about this. Are you upset about the misrepresentation of lesbian sex in the male dominated porn industry?
I mean, it gives me something to fight for.
I think
that it's really great as a comic to have like something that is actually real that you have to fight for. Being a woman and having that being pretty confusing in terms of mainstream culture, and then also being a lesbian and having that being pretty confused.
Yeah.
So I just feel like it's a great gift given the career that I chose that people don't understand what the hell is going on.
Well, it's interesting to me. I think we should come around to it, not just get into it, is that, you know, what, when you are in the gay community and you are out and you speak about being a lesbian, there seems to be this idea that that just by virtue of that, there's social responsibility that, you know, I have to represent.
Right.
And I don't know what your struggle with that has been or forever, if it ever was, but we can kind of get into that later. But where did you come from? Because I don't know, you're the generation maybe a couple after me.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
we met in New York, I think, and then, you know, we casted you on my show. But where did you start doing stand-up? Where'd you grow up?
You know, I'm from Chicago.
Really?
Yeah.
Like in the city?
No, the burbs, like the hardcore suburbs of Chicago.
Which one?
I'm from a place called Western Springs.
Uh-huh. And
it's
what,
adorable. There's a milkman, literally a milkman,
still?
Like when I was growing up.
Right.
I think there still is one.
So there was like a metal box out front that they put the milk
like
in?
Like a cooler,
or,
and then they put like bottles in there. I mean,
still?
Yes. I mean, it was like idyllic. Everybody knows.
How old are you, if you don't mind me
I'm
asking?
I'm 32.
Oh,
so, I mean, this is like,
there was sort of a holdover. Sort
yes.
Of
this
frozen
is like
in time.
A beautiful Pleasantville sort of situation where like the whole place is basically in black.
Middle class, working class, upper middle class?
No, upper middle class. And right next to like a very, very wealthy suburb. So we were kind of like the wrong side of the tracks, but in like a way where the wrong side of the tracks still gets milk delivered.
The four bedroom ghetto. Four bedroom house ghetto.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But the town next door is like where Dennis the Menace was filmed. And
really?
The movie Backdraft. So if you can imagine, like, it actually has red brick streets and stuff like that.
So it's a real American feeling place.
Gorgeous, yeah. And
what'd your dad do?
My dad's a lawyer.
So he's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. What kind of lawyer?
He does like wrongful firings and stuff like that.
So he's on the good team?
He's on the good team, yeah.
Yeah.
He works for himself. He has like a really small firm and he works super long hours and always has my entire life.
And your folks married?
Yeah, they've been together for 40 years.
How do you like that?
I mean, it's bizarre that I have 40 together. How is that? Can you imagine 40 years? And they fought a lot when I was growing up. And I think I thought that was them not liking each other.
Yeah.
But now that I'm the age that I am, I kind of realize like maybe that was them figuring out how to stay together.
And you have brothers and sisters?
I'm in the middle. I have two sisters.
So you're all girls?
All girls.
Are you the only gay one?
I am the only gay one, and my sisters are very girly, hyper girly girls. Like my older sister's, she still is a modern dancer. As a kid, she was a ballerina.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's nice. So your parents must have been pretty supportive of the artistic track.
Yeah, my little sister lives in Argentina, and she's like an actor and teaches Spanish theater. She teaches theater in Spanish.
Really?
Yes. Everybody in my family has like... I mean, my older sister is also a lawyer now, but she works...
Lawyer, modern dancer.
She works for the city of Chicago doing their arts programming. So she like uses her degree that
way. Well, this is a very uplifting sort of progressive story we're in right now.
It is. I mean, it's weird that we all got out because not... I don't think that any of those jobs were considered options where I'm from. I'm not from like a place where people have arts jobs.
Right. But your parents must have been like, well, they're going to do what they want. They must have afforded you the luxury of that.
They were very supportive. They were really supportive, but also very conservative. I mean, I have like the kind of parents that they would like come and live in my house if I would let them. You know what I mean? Like that kind of like I have like hovery, adorable. My dad is a small Italian man who cries all the time because he's like so happy about you.
Really?
Like he'll call me.
Are both your parents Italian?
Yeah, but they're like from different parts of Italy. So my mom is really tall and she has red hair. She's from northern Italy. And my dad is kind of small and like they look.
But they're not, they were both from here.
Or mm-hmm,
they,
yeah.
Your
but they grew up in like the kind of Italian Catholic families where, you know, everybody's name is Carla,
right,
or Carl,
right,
or Victor, or Vito.
Every Sunday the family would get together kind of deal.
Absolutely. And the only reason I don't look like that is because my dad was adopted. But if my dad wasn't adopted into that family, I would like have chest hair. It's like that level of Italian.
He was adopted?
Yeah.
Does he know where from? Did he ever do that thing?
He found his... So right at the same time I was coming out... So
when was that? How old were you?
I was 20, and I was living in Boston, going to school there. And
where?
I went to Boston College, which is like a very conservative Catholic school.
I know what it is.
Yeah.
You were like, you did all the stuff.
I did all the stuff. I was a theology major.
What the fuck?
No, I'm serious. I thought I was maybe going to be a priest, but you can't in the Catholic Church, so I don't really know what I thought the end game was.
Okay, wait. So how much Catholicism were you brought up with?
Oh, I mean, like, just very hardcore. Like, I went to Catholic grade school, high school.
But did you believe it?
Yes. Yeah, I was an altar server. I was a
so you believed
Eucharistic
in hell.
Minister. I did believe in hell, yeah. And I did believe in hell for gay people.
I'm sorry if
people.
I'm putting that for gay people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a horrible burden.
I didn't, like, I wasn't very judgy. Like, I never went and tried to convert other people, but I just felt like there was a real black and white line.
But
for myself.
But I don't mean to put it in the past tense. You may still believe in hell. I don't know.
No. Zero amounts of that. All of that went away pretty quickly.
I got an email recently that I seem to be a little bit condescending towards Catholics. And I always assume that Catholics, after a certain age, pull away from it.
I can't imagine not. I am so angry with the Catholic Church because culturally that's my background. You know, like that's where I'm from and those are supposed to be my people. And it still kind of feels comfortable to hear those things because those are the words from my childhood.
In Latin or no?
Not in Latin, but like just mass and all that stuff felt really good.
Sure.
It's like my home there.
Yeah.
But I think the Catholic Church is the worst. I mean, that's me. I think it is the worst because it is an organization that touches every country in the world and do so much good.
And it touches
they don't.
Little boys.
And they touch every country in the world physically with their hands. Yeah. It's awful. And the way they treat women. Yeah. I would say the way that they treat women, it's shocking to me that more people don't talk about the way the Catholic Church treats women.
Yeah, well, they seem to be quite pushed aside into one specific role. If they have a role, it's this
it's
strange
a walking
nun.
Womb.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a walking womb.
Yeah.
Or
angry womb.
Yeah, it's a
useless womb.
It's a walking useless
empty womb.
Right. And nuns, like those women, you know, they take vows of poverty and they live with the people that they're serving. And priests often don't. You know, priests can be, they can work for the city that they live in. They don't have to work for a particular order.
And also
order.
Just the power and empire and politics of the Catholic Church and how relevant and insanely powerful it was for years.
Yeah.
I mean, there is something glorious in the fact that it's losing so much traction, if indeed it is. I don't know how people hold on to it. I guess that that believers are willing to dismiss anything as being isolated episodes of
absolutely.
Bad eggs.
I think it's that cultural thing. You know, if it feels like home, if people say something to you enough, then those just feel like the words that
Sure, and it's so ornate. I mean, they're
oh yeah, it's gorgeous. They own tons of land. They own land in great locations.
And have you gone to Italy?
Yeah, I lived in Rome for a while.
But I mean, just to go, even the smallest towns that have a cathedral, if you walk in and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Because they wanted it to be awe-inspiring. Because they had to, you know, really brain fuck the poor
Absolutely.
Of every country with this amazing, you know, structures and art. I was very impressed.
And the history is really, I mean, there's so much cool because it is such a through line to people that have lived in the past.
Uh-huh.
You know, the idea that there's like bones of saints in churches and like
St. Catherine's head right here on the wall.
Oh yeah, you do.
Yeah, it's right there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I went to the where is that in Siena?
Is that the Catherine that got beheaded? I think so. Where like her head is in one place and her body somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. So like I got the head. Yeah, who knows if it's really her head? But it's sort of fascinating. Relics. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, it's all very creepy, fucking dark stuff, man. I mean, you know, you go to Rome and you go to Catholicism is so death oriented, and they just put it out right out there. It's like the body's right there. Yeah, it's right in there.
Well,
just
so
pieces and bodies everywhere.
I don't know if you noticed this at all, but you know, saints that are martyred, like people that are martyred for the church, that become saints afterwards, when they paint them, they paint them with the instrument of their death.
Oh, really?
So like anytime you see somebody who is martyred, so like there are dudes that were like skinned alive and they're holding just like a folded over version of their body.
I didn't know that.
Or like a little mini grill.
Really?
Because they were like burned. Yeah.
Wow.
And anytime anybody's with a sword, that makes sense.
I mean, because the cross is so prevalent.
Absolutely. That's why that is, because it's keeping in line with all the rest of that.
But it's just so the death obsession of Catholicism is just mind-blowing to me. That, and I don't even know why it exists, really. I mean,
I think it's because we're going to rise again, right?
I guess so. The body's just a vessel. Why not have a dead
one
around?
Let's
hurry it along. Yeah. Or that. Yeah.
Just get to the next thing.
Let's go. So you believed in heaven, too?
I did, yeah. I believed in all of it.
And your dad being a sweet, crying man who supports the arts, it's hard for me to... It's hard to consolidate... The weird point of view of Catholicism, you know, being so strict and so black and white and so mythological with a guy who seems relatively practical.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the Italian part, though,
it's
Italian
cultural,
men are
right?
so sweet and, like,
yeah.
you know, wanna...
Right.
The women are the ones in power.
Like, so you're a young Catholic girl. You're doing all the things. You're doing what? You're giving out wafers?
Yeah, I did that at church.
How old were you?
Like, I started that when I was 18, when I went to school.
When
you
were 18?
Yeah.
Oh, you were doing that in college?
I was doing this in college. This is my, yes.
Oh, my God.
How, I know. I'd go to daily mass.
When did you know you were gay?
The first time I ever kissed a woman, when I was 20. I mean, I really didn't know, which is bizarre. I understand that it's bizarre, but I didn't know.
So, during your childhood and the idea of... The sort of horrible, you know, sentence of hell for gay people was not something weighing on your conscience because you weren't aware of it.
I wasn't aware of it. I even found a paper like that I wrote for religion class when I was junior or senior. I found it like after I'd come out, just this old floppy disk. And I looked down there and there was a paper about we had to write what we thought happened.
This was in college?
This was in high school. We had to write what we thought happened to gay people. We had to write a paper about what we thought happened to gay
people. What'd you say?
I said that I wasn't gay, so I couldn't possibly know whether or not it was a choice, so therefore I couldn't condemn anybody. That's what I said.
So you
Which is amazing!
Well, what do you attribute that to? Were you shut down?
I think I attribute to a couple things. I didn't know any gay people. Zero gay people.
Uh-huh.
I mean, all the people that I knew.
They didn't have drama at your high school?
No, but nobody was out. I mean, they did, but my closest friends that now have come out, you know, they were just like sensitive actors. Yeah,
right.
nobody was out.
No,
and our teachers
not even to each other, not even in secret.
No.
I got a problem. I sucked a dick.
Nope. No. If that was happening, I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And the teachers that we had that were very effeminate or very butch, you know, they were like priests and nuns. Seriously.
Hey, look, I have a full and I've put this theory out there before, and I know it to be true in my mind that I think that gay-leaning men in the communities, in Catholic communities, were pushed into the priesthood
Absolutely.
Out of fear. And for, you know, the community was literally like, you should really become a priest.
Right.
They're trying to save them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's also, you know, part of the reason that this whole problem has happened, because those people were not allowed to live
a
full and sexual life.
It gets a little tricky identifying them as homosexual.
I'm not saying they're gay. I'm saying that if you are able to be gay, you can live a great and actually I would say the same thing about straight men.
Yeah.
Straight men that are priests. You know, if you are able to be straight and live a full sexual life, you might not
end
up doing something that's that's messed
heinous. Up. So what the hell were you doing when you became sexually alive?
So I mean, I was dating men. I dated men for a really long time. I dated the captain of the football team in high school. I was like, we were the class right. couple. And I thought I just thought nobody really cared about sex.
Were you a jock?
Yeah, I was like a big athlete, and I was like the mascot of the football team, and I saw
you do a joke about that.
Government,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was like super involved and really like committed to school, and
yeah, you seem like you're on top of shit.
I was on top of shit. Yeah, but I mean, I was a mess. I had no idea. I was in love with my best friend. I didn't know. I just thought that's how women felt. Now,
so this is all in retrospect.
Yes, because I think women also have that kind of more expansive view of the way they can be friends with each other. You know, like if dudes are really close, when you're a little kid, somebody's going to come up to you and they're going to call you a name. You know, they're going to call you what they think you right. are, mm-hmm. and then maybe you'll start to wonder if that's what you are. But yeah. for women, that happens a lot less. I uh-huh. think like you can just be a jock, and right. you can just have really close friendships. You can have sleepovers. You can like hug each other, and none of it means anything unless it does.
Right.
You know. So I just thought that's how everybody felt.
So you're having sleepovers, hugging each other.
Yeah, I would sleep in my best. I would go to sleep at my best friend's house, and she
not on a sleepover. Just any night of the week, or
we would have sleepovers, but she would have She had seven older brothers and sisters that no longer lived at home.
Uh-huh.
And I would insist on sleeping in her bed.
Even though there's nine other
bedrooms. There were like nine other bedrooms.
And
but I just was like really committed to sleeping in her bed. But I just thought that's how best friends were.
But you never felt a sexual feeling. You just felt
connected.
No, I
think I did, but I don't think I knew what sexual feelings were.
That's astounding to me.
Yeah.
You must have been pretty shut down.
I mean, I think I was very confused.
Yeah.
I would have dreams about women.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And when you were with men, that we don't need to keep talking about it, but why not?
No, I mean, I'm happy to talk about it because this is real.
Well, right. But
and
you know,
I think
yeah,
this actually happens to a lot more women than...
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, men, like I said, they're labeled so much earlier. And a lot of the women that I've dated, a lot of gay women that I yeah. know, had like a similar experience to this.
They were just shut down and thought they were yeah. weird.
Yeah, women aren't supposed to get in touch with their sexualities. I don't know if you ever
right.
have heard what it's like to be a teen girl, but you're
right.
all about like his blowjob.
Right.
You know, nobody's trying to figure out like whether or not you're like, hey, what are you jerking off to? Nobody yeah, yeah. nobody gives a shit. You're not supposed to be touching yourself.
That's guy
like,
talk.
It has
well, that's
nothing.
A Catholic thing too,
yeah,
though.
It is a Catholic thing, absolutely. But I think it's also a thing for women. You know, I think women are not really taught to find what they like.
Right.
Of course they're not. You know,
yeah.
it's all about...
Yeah.
It's all about finding out what he likes so that you can turn him on. And it's not
right,
about what you...
And that's supposed to be satisfying to you. Somehow.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you made him come. Isn't that great?
Yeah, yeah, it's easy.
You did a great job.
Yeah, what a trick that is. How hard is that, really, to make a guy
that
come?
That's really hard because it's yeah. a penis.
It's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But all right, so you have all these feelings that are not identified until much later in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You're curious about religion. Why do you end up? Well, first, let's get back to the football, the yeah. head of the football team. What was that guy like?
He was really nice. We were really good friends, and I liked talking to him. He was handsome. Uh-huh. I mean, I know what good looking men
did you
look
date
like.
Him?
I dated him for like 3.5 years. I had boyfriends in college also.
Did you have sex with him?
This is a really weird debatable. How can the answer to this be debatable? But I don't know because like I also was pretty committed to waiting for marriage because I didn't know that like that was supposed to be a difficult
but
thing to
there,
do.
Was there also guilt around it because of a Catholic?
Yeah,
thing?
Exactly. So, yeah. But I think also it was a great excuse. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was the twofer where it was like
you could hold on, you could yeah. hold the line.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
so,
of your beliefs.
And yeah,
yeah.
Just like, oh man, as much as I want to,
yeah,
and
yeah.
believe me,
yeah, I really want to. Oh man, So no.
I would, he would go home. I just have memories of, you know, like he would go home after we would be hanging out, like making out in my parents' basement yeah. or something. And
dry humping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it felt nice because
sure.
kissing feels nice.
Sure.
But it was never like, I also felt gross. Like it felt, I had like weird rules. Like he couldn't touch my shoulders and stuff like that. I mean, just, you know, like normal heterosexual female rules
sure.
that
no,
they have
no shoulder
men.
Touching. Yeah. I've heard that a lot from yep. a lot of women. Please no shoulder
and
touching.
And he would go home and I just remember that I would need to stay up for like a bunch of hours. Like I would if he left at 10 or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I'd have to stay up till like 4 o'clock in the morning and I would like eat cereal, you know, just like do like what are like the
oh.
most these like really comforting things like
right.
I would eat cereal, I would watch TV.
You were just all jacked up.
I was just like I had to get it back out of my body, like whatever had
yeah.
been happening,
yeah,
you know, I just couldn't deal with it.
Because the feelings were overwhelming, or was it like it felt uncomfortable?
It was so uncomfortable.
Oh my God.
But I liked him. You know, yeah, like he was right. a good, like he
so
was
you
somebody.
You just couldn't understand.
I couldn't understand why I would feel so uncomfortable.
And you had no one to
out.
Talk to.
Yeah. I didn't, there was no person that would have
so
been
it
able
wasn't
to
really,
identify
it,
this.
It doesn't sound like it was misery, but it was frustrating.
I think probably it would have been misery if I had had any idea that it was supposed to feel different than that. You know, like, does that make any sense?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Like, if you've never seen the sun, you're right. going to be like, darkness is decent.
Yeah it's decent, a little weird.
It's decent to good. Yeah.
So you were just sort of like, I guess this is life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I understand that. But I think everyone feels that to a certain degree. And those kind of frustrations are communicable. I mean, yeah. You must have been talking about boys at some level to somebody.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, all my best friends were dating dudes and, you know, we talked about our guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's not like he wasn't attractive. You know, I didn't look at him and think like, oh, he's so cute. Like I wished.
But it wasn't
I
like
thought
I
he was
got,
so
got,
cute. I just couldn't
to,
figure out what to do yeah, with how yeah. cute he was.
Couldn't, you never sort of like, got to get that cock.
No, got to get that cock away from me. Yeah, put it back in its car and send
yeah,
it home.
Yeah. Good. Thank God that didn't come out. That seems a little scary. So why theology, though, ultimately? I mean, so you were a believer.
Yeah.
You go to college. When did God go away? When he kissed a girl?
A little bit before that, because I started realizing how the Catholic Church treated women. That kind of happened like
so it was intellectual.
Right before. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I will say that I think the reason I was interested in it is because I was interested in what's important to people, uh-huh. which is still what I'm interested in. Uh-huh. That's the same thing as comedy. You know, you're just like talking about what's important to you and trying to hear what's important to other people and like live
or
in the
you're
world
trying to
in
make
that
sense of
connected
things.
Way. Yeah. yeah. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just... And if you read religious texts like kind of poetry or if you, you know, absorb them on like a really superficial level, like mm-hmm. if you don't take them literally,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think I think after a while I wasn't taking them literally, but I was just like, this is a cool way to live. You know, it's cool to live.
There was something about the idea of faith, of that making people feel more comfortable in the world.
Yeah. And also like working for the outsider, which mm-hmm. is eventually where, because I kind of... swayed towards a much more leftist view of mm-hmm. Catholicism, because there actually is like a pretty big...
Oh, I know. Yeah, they've been around for...
Liberation theology.
The marchers.
Like, yeah. Yeah, I would go on those marches. You right. know, I went to like the School of the Americas, which is where they train people to do the assassinations in like South and Central America uh-huh. on American soil. And I would go to protest there and I would go and do like solidarity trips in uh-huh. foreign countries, not to like
really?
Convert people, but just to kind of like be present to be like a witness like, to poverty.
We're the good Catholic.
Yeah. Isn't that like the nicest thing in the world a college kid could do is just like go spend spring break with
sure.
like a really
yeah.
poor Jamaican person.
Of course.
It was so
yeah.
nice of me.
Yeah. Because
I had no skills.
Then you get the sun and you also
yeah.
feel like you're doing something important.
Right. Exactly.
Where are these countries that you went to? You went to Jamaica?
Yeah. I went to Jamaica and I went to the Navajo Nation. I went all over the
really?
U.S.
Really? You went to the, we were in Arizona?
Yeah.
Or in New Mexico and Arizona? In
Arizona?
The yeah. Navajo. Really? What was that march?
It was not a march, just like I spent like 2 weeks just going to like the local organizations there and just kind of learning about.
It's like another planet, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, at the time, like HIV was one of the biggest issues that they were dealing with. Because,
really?
Because like condoms were not generally accepted as a
uh-huh.
form of birth control.
Right.
So that was like a huge HIV
uptick. Was there a lot of drug use too?
Alcohol.
I know alcohol.
Alcohol like, stuff, yeah. but not like, not,
heroin.
Not like alcohol, like mixing chemicals together to like make something that would intoxicate
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah. The bad, like industrial.
Like hairspray. People were drinking hairspray a lot because that'll affect your body, but also it does the same thing
liver.
To the inside of your body that it does to
right.
your hair. So,
horrible.
Yeah.
So you spent 2 weeks there. I have no idea what that's like. You know, I've read a book or two on the condition of the Indian population at that time. It's just devastating. Like they're so isolated.
It was also really wild just going into like a grocery store and mm-hmm. seeing that everybody there was like visibly Native American because mm-hmm. it made me realize, you know, how often I didn't see those
yeah.
types of faces. And then
yeah.
just to, like, this is just domestically, this is just in our
What'd you learn there?
Country.
I mean, what'd you walk away from that with in general? Like, even Jamaica,
yeah.
I mean, what do you, you know, what did it do to your heart? Anything? Or did you just feel like...
No, I think all that stuff just made me realize, like, how, like, what you can do to help.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what you can do to help is sometimes being on the ground. You know, like, yeah. I would see people that really had skills,
that help.
You know, that really had skills that were really like there and committed. Uh-huh. And then other than that, you know, just realizing like how much we need to support those people and
that are that are in trouble.
Yeah.
Or that
but
don't
like
have...
support the people that are, you know, committed to staying there and committed to helping.
Oh, yeah, that's
like
right.
Legislation and things like that. You know, like this is not.
No,
that's not it. That's not the way to do it. You know, it's like.
That's right. Or blathering about it on television. The unsung heroes are the people that are like, we're feeding them.
Right. And I would also say like people that live in that community, in the, you know, the different communities that I was in that are like the Jamaicans that are helping Jamaicans or, you know, I did some stuff in Rome as well where it would be like Roman people serving Roman people at a soup kitchen. And I just think like that's also an even more powerful tool than just thinking that you can come in and solve anything.
Right.
Because
I
can't solve anything.
Right. It's volunteering. It's like it's being selfless. It's service, which is a big part of the Christian deal.
Right.
And getting out there and do it. But like, who has time for that?
Right?
God those people are out there.
I agree.
You go over there, you give them a pat on the back. This is great.
Thanks for what you're doing. I'm going to go home.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it is, I think, also just realizing a limitation to, you know, realizing that you're like a piece of shit who's just getting on with their life is also a powerful thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's real. You know,
we're not all
like
saints.
We're sending tweets out.
Yeah, are we?
Yeah, fuck ourselves. Yeah. You know, like, we're not doing anything.
I feel bad about it, but like, but because of that, like, I try not to pay any self-righteous lip service to causes because I don't think that's really doing anything. I'd rather just accept the fact that, look, I share my life, and if it helps people, that's great. But I'm not going to pretend that, like I'm some big message guy or that I'm, like, or carry the burden of, like, hey, I donated some money to some place. Does that make me something?
Well, I think actually this is an interesting way to go back to what you were just asking me earlier, which is like, I think there is something also to realizing like your own community that you can kind of witness to and connect to. So that same way that like, oh, there's these people that are spending their lives like that. Like I am just a silly stand-up comic. I just tell jokes in bars while people are, you know, hopefully not getting too drunk to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I know that when I was coming out, if I had heard somebody like me talking about their life, that would have helped me so much. You know, and like the kind of stuff that you talk about like eating or drug use or depression or mental illness.
It makes
like
a huge
those
difference.
Things are, I guess it's also realizing like it's the best thing you can do in the world is just talk about your own stuff because like the more personal you are to you, you know, the more you're connecting to the people that are suffering in that in that community.
Yeah, and then once you sort of get through that or what, the weird thing is like only an individual can decide what their civic or social responsibility really is. And I think that a lot of people just sort of like avoid it. Like, you know, I vote, you know, and I do what I can, you don't. But but like some people find it in their hearts to dedicate their lives to that. And thank God they're out there, you know, because they're the ones that really are out there feeding people. I'm glad they're there. I'm not one of them.
No, we're not one of them.
Yeah, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I do what I can, right?
I think you're doing great, Mark.
All right, thank you. Thank you. Unburden me.
I just think, I don't know that that's what I should have been doing.
Right.
You know, I don't fucking, I don't, but I also don't believe in the Catholic Church.
Right.
I don't think there's like a God. I don't know that I should be in Jamaica talking to Jamaicans. I am like a white person from the suburbs of Chicago. Like, I'm not the one to tell that story, but I can get up in front of people and it doesn't make me uncomfortable.
Right.
And, you know, like, I'm sure the number of times that you've heard this massively outnumbers mine, but the number of people that are always like, I don't know how you do this job.
Yeah,
I don't know how you're a stand-up comic. That's such a weird, like,
yeah, I don't know how I am either.
Job. And number one, I don't know how I am either, but also, like, just different people have different skills.
And
like,
also,
bodies are built for different things,
that's right.
And I should never be a doctor.
Because that's not true, necessarily.
You think I should be a doctor?
No, I don't think you should be, but I think after a certain point, you accept who you are and don't use that other shit to beat the shit out of yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like you could have been whatever you wanted. And frankly, we're all disappointed.
Okay, Dad. So sorry to let you down.
It's all right. I'm happy as long as you're happy.
Yeah.
But you know, we
took a long time to get that.
Yeah,
thank you so much for delivering that via your face from somebody else. I needed to hear that from.
No one's disappointed. But you know, you carry that stuff. But it's weird about the church too. Is that as awful as it may be, you know, politically and you know, as an entity in the world, the Catholic Church. I mean, they are the ones feeding people.
Or just giving the solace of having like a place to go where we can all hang out with each other.
Sure.
And I guess that's again how I would like compare it to stand up. Because it's just about like feeling like it's okay to all gather. You know, like we want to be human beings want to be we want to be so close to each other, but we are so confused as to like where the boundaries are and how to do it. And so like, you know, when you say like, "Hey, this is a stand-up show."
Yeah.
And people will sit on top of each other, just like, oh, this is normal, because they gave me a they gave me like a matrix, so this makes sense now.
You ever walk into a stand-up room and it's like not filled, and there's like 15 people there, and like, I wouldn't sit there.
No,
I'd be
like,
there's no one here. Let's get out of here.
Right.
It's always
I would never go to a stand-up show.
Wait, yeah,
I actually would never go to a stand-up show.
Well, I wouldn't go to one where I felt the onus of like, sort of like, well, I'm one of 12 people here.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
But all right, so did you get the theology degree?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have a faith, peace, and justice minor.
A faith, peace, and justice.
Yeah.
Did you think you were going to go to law school?
I went to social work school for a while.
You did?
I thought I was going to be a social worker. Maybe.
So, okay. Yeah. So that
was like the evolution of that, where I was like, well, like it's like.
So it is in you. You did have to fight that struggle of like being, you know, of service and to the world and of service to yourself.
Well, I was going to social work school during the day and I was doing comedy at night. I was doing improv, like professionally even. Uh-huh. And I remember one of my like fellow students came up to me and was just like, hey, she was a little bit older. Like, I think it was, she was returning to school, that kind of person where like she'd had another career. Mm-hmm. She was returning. And she literally came up to me and said like, hey, what are you doing here? And I was like,
at social work school.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. I guess I thought I was like, I don't know, helping people. She was like, this is very expensive. If you can't answer that question, you should just not do this and do the other thing that you talk about all the time in class.
Really?
Yeah. She was really cut and dry about it. You know what? I thank that woman so much because I did quit.
So don't waste your time, our money.
Yeah.
Or
also just like, I mean, I was paying. Like you have to pay to go to social work school. You
get so you're like
no money
as
a social worker.
So she just checked your heart.
Yeah. She was just like, hey, you don't need to be doing this.
Yeah.
I don't know who you're trying to prove something to. Like,
Jesus.
Do the thing you want to do. Yeah, exactly. That guy is so judgmental.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to do this for Jesus. So, all right. So when you did kiss a girl, was that like holy shit, why didn't I do this sooner?
It was completely, actually this happened right after I got back from that trip to Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
That's when that happened. And the only reason that I include that is because I kissed this woman. I was dating two guys at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to three parties that night, the night that I kissed her. I went to a party with one of the dudes I was dating, a party with
BC
the other dudes.
Parties?
Yeah, like just
the
on
worst.
Campus parties. Yeah, yeah, they were really
the
raucous. But
I went to BU. I know the BC guys.
Yeah, I lived right near there.
So
for
just
a while.
Like just like Irishy looking, you know,
pretty Irishy,
preppy and jocks.
I mean, I dated one guy who had like a really long beard.
Okay.
So I mean, like,
well, yeah,
it wasn't
maybe
that
things
preppy.
Have changed.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, you're younger.
No, it's
than
pretty
me.
Preppy.
Yeah, it is.
But I kissed those two dudes after, and then I kissed her.
At two different parties.
At two different
the
parties.
The last party was the chick?
Yeah, and she was, I kissed her, and it was life-changing. I mean, completely.
Were you a little drunk?
Yes, yeah, we had split a giant bottle of Yellowtail wine, like a like magnum-sized bottle.
So you go
of
to
wine.
Two, like, sort of, you know, kind of dude parties, like, you know, college things. Where was the last party?
Actually, like, she had come with me to these parties, so we just went back to my room. And we had like
so
a little gathering.
So she was hanging
there.
Out.
Yeah.
A little gathering.
Yeah.
Just you two?
Yeah. We were like hanging out there,
uh-huh.
finishing some wine.
Uh-huh.
And then I don't remember what she said. Probably something about poverty. But I kissed
that,
her.
That hot talk.
Yeah. Yeah. I kissed her and it was, I mean, it was completely, it was like my first sexual experience, you
right.
know? I mean,
yeah.
it really was. And I knew immediately that something was very different.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like watching, I say this on stage, but this is 100% true. It would be like watching a movie with like the director's commentary that you never understood. Like you never understood the movie and then suddenly like the director's explaining it. And you're like, oh shit, like that's why I never wore like a top to my bikini bottoms when I was a little child. Because I like had some gender stuff going
yeah.
on. And oh, like that's why I wanted to sleep in my best friend's bed
right,
when there
right.
were all those available. Like I just, it all happened at once. Like I flooded through every.
So your whole life all of a sudden just made sense.
Yeah, exactly. Like a Rubik's cube.
Right.
Just like you solved just in one move. Like a kiss just solves a Rubik's cube. Bam, that's what's happening. But the next morning I woke up and I had ringworm. I had contracted ringworm in Jamaica, which is a fungus.
I know.
And it grows in a circle.
Yeah.
So I had got it on my face. and it had not shown up until the morning after I kissed this girl for the first time, which as a Catholic person who thinks that they might be going to hell because they've just discovered they have same-sex attraction is like probably one of the craziest things that could happen to you,
right.
Especially if you've seen the movie The Exorcist.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Satan's in you.
Yeah, Satan's in you. He's trying to get out.
It's only a matter of time before the three sixes appear in the circle.
Exactly.
And it's not going to go away.
No.
Oh, so
it's terrifying.
So there was that just exacerbated shame, religion-based shame.
Yeah, absolutely. I was so ashamed of myself, and I did end up dating that girl. She was my first girlfriend, but I didn't stop dating those other guys for years.
But wait, let's walk through the day of ringworm. What was, you know?
I got on a plane and went to go visit my family because it was Easter.
But what did you put makeup on?
Nope, I just had like a giant flaming thing on my face.
And you had no idea what it was?
I had no idea what it was. And when I got there, the second I got off the plane, my parents were like, we have to take you to the hospital. Something terrible has happened to you.
They didn't know either.
Yeah, they didn't know what it was either. So we were
pretty
sitting
innocuous.
In the hospital. I mean, it's no big deal. You just put like a cream on it.
Yeah.
But it's also really contagious.
Uh-huh.
So I had to call all of those people because there totally would have been a chance that like everybody would have gotten it. Also the girl. You know, I am at this school where at the time I could have been kicked out of school for being
but
gay.
But it's so hilarious because you didn't fuck anybody. So you get this weird information like I might have given you this weird fungal.
It's the weirdest non-STD call in the world. Yeah. I might have given you a fungus on your face. You would know if there's a circle.
It's weird that it shows up on your face. Usually it's on your feet or your arms.
I was just in like some weird places in Jamaica. I don't know how it came on my face.
Right, luckily it was. That's a lucky one to get. It's not like hookworm or liver flukes.
No,
it's like
absolutely.
Ringworm. It's not that uncommon. You get it at camp.
Yes.
And did anyone get it?
Nobody got it. No. Thank God. Nobody got it.
Because
we're all kind of in the same circle of friends. Like it would have been
pretty
intense.
So you treat your ringworm and you go back and you're dating this woman.
Yeah.
And you're dating the two guys.
I'm dating the two guys.
But you're not doing anything with anybody, really.
I was totally having sex with her.
With her?
Yeah.
Oh, that happened quickly.
Happened very quickly.
And she was gay.
Yes,
or
but
were you
like,
both finding out at the same time?
We were finding out at the same time, yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's an exciting way to go about it.
It was really rad. Like, there was no teacher-student.
Uh-huh.
We were both very much like learning how to do
uh-huh.
it, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And also, like, it was awful to be, I mean, because I hid it. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't out. She was out to her friends, so I would, like, go to her place and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say this. Like, I wish that that's not how my life had been. I wish I hadn't been as ashamed of myself, and I wish I hadn't had to hide. But I will tell you, like, some of the best sex you're going to have in your life is, like,
secret
gay sex. Secret gay sex that you're hiding from your boyfriends.
There's a lot of straight people that agree with you.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of Republican senators who agree with me.
Sure.
Yeah, so it was, like, really exciting and new.
And what was the sort of process of coming out to your family?
I told my folks that...
Did you have to prepare? Did you sort of go through it in your head? Or
I was so upset. Like, I was disgusted with
still
myself.
Still ashamed, yeah.
I was disgusted with what was happening, and I...
But you were having a great time. So that,
I was
those were both happening at the same
time. Yes, both having the same time.
So you're keeping the
amazing
guys around...
Amazing sex,
To sort of
just
placate
like,
your
maybe
shame.
Maybe in case I can... talk myself out of this. Like, I still have these dudes in case, like, in case I can get married, in case I can have babies.
Right,
like, you know, they're still
if
around.
This doesn't stick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I told my folks because I got home for the summer, and I mean, I was just a wreck. Like, I wasn't sleeping or eating.
Sophomore?
This was sophomore year, yeah. I wasn't eating or sleeping. I was,
because you were plagued with shame.
Yes. And well, I just also thought my life was over. You know, I didn't know any gay adults.
So
I had,
you're
like
no family, no kids, no. Like,
yes, exactly. I was like, well, I don't know where I'm going
to
live, you know, but it's not going
to
be in
a
safe
place.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to find the gay capital.
Mm-hmm. And I won't be able to have normal friends, and I won't be able to have a job. You know, like, I mean, really, I just didn't think that anything was going
to
be.
And all that. And the fact that that's all happening to you at 20. You know, like, where you're, you know, conscious and, you know, all, you know, you're a thinking person, you've got your shit together, and it's sort of like, this desire thing is fucking me.
Yeah, I'm going to be done. Like, I'm all, you know, I'm trying to figure out what my job is going to be, my career, and, like, move forward and just become an adult, and it's already all done.
Yeah,
I've
because,
already
like,
ruined my
you're
whole
doomed.
Life.
You're doomed.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's horrible.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah, so, okay, so...
So I told my folks, my dad cried for 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah. He cried for 5 years. Like, every time I would talk to him.
What did you say to them? You sat them down? Did you
No, they sat me down. They sat me down because I was behaving so erratically, like just staying up all night.
Are you on drugs?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, they also guessed what was going on because I was getting a lot of phone calls from the woman I was dating and like weird phone calls where I would like take the, this is like when portable phones were a thing and I would like go outside.
Yeah, yeah, I got it.
You know, and I had always had like a very open, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'd always had like a very open relationship with them.
With the folks,
and really like been like a good kid.
Yeah,
like I was, like my older sister was the wild one, you know, that would like sneak out the window and my dad had to like remove the door from the hinges to find out she wasn't in there. Like she was like the Ferris Bueller's Day Off kid.
Yeah.
And I was the Cameron, which is funny.
Yeah.
I just realized that that's true. But, and my little sister was so little. She's 7 years younger than me. She's 10 years younger than my older sister. So she was just like blissfully in grade school. And then my older sister was fucking, like she'd just done everything in the world. And I was like the
bad Catholic girl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she was, she was totally the, I mean, she went to, Diablo Cody was in her high school class. Like she went to our high school. So that movie Juno, where like there's like a wild, like that's like the kind of person that she was. Just like, just like raucous and, you know.
And so,
what would happen if somebody had a baby? Like all that stuff was like what was happening for her. And then I was just like, this is my boyfriend. He's the captain of the football team. I'm gonna do everything right. I'm a psych theology. I'm a, like, it was
the control freak.
Yeah, I was totally the control freak. Yes. Yeah.
So, all right. So they sit you down.
They sat me down. They were like, we think you're dating this woman. They named her. We think you're dating her. Is that right? And I said, that is right. Yeah. And I burst into tears.
Yeah.
And they said, I don't remember. I don't remember them saying anything but that they wanted me to go to therapy. We went to therapy as a family, and I.
The three or the five of you?
Four. Three of us.
Three. Okay.
And I think because my older sister, she kind of knew what was going on. I had sort of told her she was living in a different city, and she was like, her response was like, "I kissed a girl in college. No big deal." Like, she was not necessarily 100% getting it, but she was also very, very like open and just rad about it.
Right.
So that was great, but she wasn't at home. Right. So they took me, and I think I thought, you know, I've since realized that they were probably really confused, that they just didn't have a better plan.
Well, they, I guess,
but at the time, I thought they were trying to get like reparative therapy going.
Really, I like, it seems to me that they were probably, I don't know, but it seems like your parents, they just wanted to make sure you knew what you were doing.
So that is actually exactly what it is. But that is like one of the most damaging things I think a gay person can hear when they're coming out, is that like that thing where their parents are so worried for them, you know, because I was so worried for me. So just to have that echoed back was pretty awful. Does that make any sense?
But it's like, but I can understand that. But
me too.
But it's better than like we're taking you to church.
I mean, it is better. You know, my that also happened. You know, my dad did.
He said you got to talk to the priest.
He just talked to me about. You know, he talked to me about
the
hell.
Bible. Yeah, about he did.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know that.
Yeah, he said, you know, I'm worried that like we won't end up in the same place. I mean, they were doing the best.
He really thought he had a clean slate, that guy.
Yep. They were doing the best that they could. I am very aware of the fact that, like, as much as I didn't have any knowledge, they had also no knowledge, and then they also weren't experiencing this. So I didn't know anything about being gay, but I was gay. So I knew that this felt strong and weird and real.
Right.
So for them, I think you just remove all those emotions, and it just looks...
Well, it's impossible.
It looks like a choice, and it looks like I'm ruining my life.
Right. I think it's impossible in that context for them to have empathy.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't, of course.
Right.
Right.
And that's a sad moment.
It is really sad, yeah. And I think they also have apologized for that. I mean, they're not... They look back on it, and they realize that that was a tough time for them, too. And
sure.
That they're sorry that they like weren't able to...
And how did that land
to trust me? I mean, I do forgive them. I do. I get it. Like, I get why that's what happened. I 100% get it. I just think that it also helped me in some ways because we had such a close relationship and I was so worried about letting them down that I think, like, letting them down in this ultimate way.
That you had no control
over. This way that I would never be able to change.
Right.
That was kind of a gift because now
you got freedom.
I can be a stand-up comic. You know, like, it's like, I've already done the worst thing in the world, which is...
So, but it's still like you can't even frame it that way. Do you still think it that, you know?
Oh, no. I just mean I've already caused the largest possible schism. Like there's nothing else that I could have done. There's no other way I could have been that I think would have disappointed them more for a short term. So we like already went through that. So now they just kind of have to trust me a little bit.
12 years ago?
Yeah, that was 12 years ago. Mm-hmm.
So for 5 years, your father just couldn't.
He was really having a hard time. Yeah. My mom was okay a lot earlier. My dad had a really hard time. He was able to kind of wrap his mind around it and comprehend it when he was first able to meet a partner of mine.
Oh, really?
Like, because for a really long time, they wouldn't meet the women I was dating. And then when he eventually met my girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, he was like, oh, no, I totally get it. She's cool. Like, even
oh, really?
Hot. Yeah, like, he, like, thought she was rad and, like, totally got.
So not unlike your isolation and how you grew up. I mean, absolutely. They were just as isolated.
They'd never seen it. So right. Then how does it look? My daughter's life is over.
Right.
Finally, they see what it looks like. And she's like a beautiful woman. She's really warm and friendly.
Uh-huh.
She's a friend of my sister's.
And she's
like,
a person.
She's safe. Yeah, you know, there's a lot. She's a person. Yeah, she's a human being.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it was then suddenly he was just like, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were dating monsters. But you're dating like people that are really nice.
And you're not a monster.
Yeah, and then after that, he was able to just completely change. He's the first person that called me. He called me the morning that DOMA was overturned. He was driving to work with a dude that he was going to represent in court. He heard on the radio that DOMA was overturned. He pulled over. This is like at, I think this call was at like 6 o'clock in the morning, uh-huh. our time, because he was in Chicago. He called me, and I was in my bed with my fiance, and he called and was like, put me on speakerphone. You guys, you can get married. And he's standing on the side of the road. He's crying, just like, I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
And I said, like, Dad, are you also happy for you? Because you get to come to my wedding. And he was just like, oh, Cameron, I never thought of that. I can't wait to be there. You know, like, I mean, so he's really had a massive change. And it's amazing.
That's sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a sweet, sweet man. He just didn't know. I didn't know.
Everybody needs a learning curve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's an acceptance. And, you know, and he likes your fiance.
Oh, yeah. They're like close friends, actually. They really like each other. Yeah.
What does she do?
She's a stand-up comic, actually.
Do I know her?
You might have met her. Her name's Rhea Butcher. She's a little bit, so if we're several generations apart, she's like one or two generations below me in terms of when she started.
How long you guys been seeing each other?
We've been seeing each other for 3 years. We were friends before that, which I've never dated anybody
right.
that I was like friends with first.
Right.
But she's rad. And I liked her stuff. You know, like I liked her like material.
You got to.
Yeah, and I just thought she was so rad
it's
on
tricky.
Stage.
Tricky with the...
I don't think you could ever do it the other way.
If you don't like their stuff?
Yeah, and also I don't even think I could date somebody that... I don't think I could like date somebody and then have them start. You know, like I just, it
yeah,
was
no,
like,
it's rough
it was rad because I already
not,
knew her as a comic.
It's hard not for somebody to feel in the shadow of the other or competitive or, you know, like sort of like, maybe you should not do that joke that way.
Right.
Yeah. But that's not happening.
No, she was already, I just like got to see her begin.
Do you have wedding plans?
We don't have anything planned yet because I've just been like traveling. Like, oh, also we need a wife. We realized that after we got engaged.
What do you mean?
Like, neither of us knows how to do any of that stuff.
Oh.
Like, she's butchered than me.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
Her last name is Butcher.
Right.
And it is 100% true. Like, she...
So you don't... What? You're both sort of like, who's going to clean up?
We're just like, where do you get a cake?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know where you do that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess. Like, I just never imagined what a wedding would look like.
No, you can
but
find.
I can't
people,
wait.
You just hire people to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think, like, eventually I'll get to the place where I can imagine that that's what's going to happen.
Well, so, okay. So now getting, you know, coming full circle around to, you know, your responsibility or your... But I think it's very interesting, and I don't want to just blow past it, that you know, not only the challenge of accepting, you know, being gay and then having your parents accept you, but the deeper wiring of shame and the idea that you've let people down, that's got to be ongoing.
I do think that that's something I still struggle with. I mean, I think that's the whole reason that I originally started doing stand-up. Like, I was doing improv before, and that felt like... okay, I've always been funny.
Mm-hmm.
I had like crossed eyes when I was a little kid. When you have crossed eyes, you better be like,
how'd they unfuck them?
I had multiple surgeries and I wore an
really?
Eye patch for 8 years of my childhood. Yeah, this is all true, Mark.
You really?
Yeah,
you were crossed eyes. So they started you with like bottom glasses.
Yeah, I had surgery when I was two. And then I had to wear glasses, and then I had to wear an eye patch for literally 8 years.
What?
Yeah, this is all true.
Until you were, what, 10?
Yeah. And then I had surgery again when I was 20.
And it worked? But, so what was between 10 and 20? You just wore glasses? Or?
It just, like, would occasionally cross. So it still wavers now, like if I'm really tired or something like that. Or well, when
that's
I
a whole
to,
other struggle. So yeah. you were the... You
so
were
I was
the,
like a little weird-looking kid in a weird little body in a place where everybody was kind of idyllic.
And they made fun of you?
Nobody made fun of me because I figured out how to be funny. You know what I mean? Like, just be like, I'm a goofy eye patch kid, you know? And then, like, if you're that person, you can kind of get in front of it.
Right.
And I think a lot of comics had, like, something they were getting in front of.
Uh-huh.
That's, like, why we overdeveloped the sense of humor, because it's de-escalating a situation that could be really difficult if we weren't able to de-escalate.
Mine has always existed in my head. So it's a never-ending resource.
But, I mean, that's real, too. You know?
Of course it is.
Yeah, that's all real.
Yeah.
And,
So, okay.
So I found stand-up because I think it was like, I wanted to figure out how to come out to people. Because, you know, I think I look gay, but like walking down the street, or if you go buy a bagel and somebody's like, hey, who you buying? And you like buy three extra and people are like, ooh, who you sharing a bagel with? And you have to be like, oh, I'm taking it home to my girlfriend.
Right.
Like conversationally, sexuality isn't about sex, but when you mention girlfriend, then people like automatically go somewhere. It's like this weird, it feels like it's like too much conversationally, but then you don't want to lie. Uh-huh. So you're just like always riding this line about how do I like navigate the world having this thing that's so central to my being that I also don't think is a big deal, but that if I don't talk about it, it's like lying by omission.
Well, that's the weird responsibility of it. I mean, you know, how do you continue to own yourself and your point of view? And if you're going to do stand up, like quite honestly, you know, I watched 10 minutes of stand up and it gave me the framework of, you know, what I was going to talk to you about, and was, you know, they weren't stories. They were just jokes. But even if you, you know, you want to do jokes that are grounded in you, you got to own yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And so, I think I have to, I mean, I come out like the second I walk out on stage, I try and come out because I don't want anybody to be thinking about it.
Right.
Because then they're thinking and they're not listening. You know, like you break down the mechanism of jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So like I always come out because of, like, I know I'm wearing a vest. Like, I don't want you to be confused about the fact that I know I look gay. Yeah. I look gay because I'm gay. It's fine. We can get through it. Let's talk about some other shit. But if you don't mention it, then people are just like, I don't, does she know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, does she know she's gay? I can't. Like, I got to tell her. Yeah. If she doesn't know, I got to tell her.
Yeah.
Where were you when I was 10? Where were you when I was 18?
That
would have been more helpful then. Now I know.
But in terms, so that's really a personal choice, but you don't feel like, you know, like I have to, you know, represent the gay community.
I do a little bit feel like that because especially right now, everybody has jokes about equal marriage or everybody's talking about it. It's like in the ether, you know, it's such a big pop culture moment.
It's like, finally.
Yeah, it's great. But like when I'm on a show, if there is another straight comic that does equal marriage material and I don't do it, I feel like somebody else has spoken for me.
Right.
And that bothers me. And that's like, I feel like, you know, because we're a minority still.
Right.
If gay people aren't speaking on our own behalf, then we're just taken out of the conversation. I don't want somebody else to decide my life. I would like to represent myself.
And there you go.
So it's like a kind of a social responsibility in that way. But it's because I want to make the world better for me.
Right.
You know, like it's very selfish.
It cuts both ways.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sort of interesting. Yeah. I don't, it's very interesting to me too, to see the type of person that resisted gay marriage so emphatically are really, it's weird because, you know, now that it's happening and the momentum is, it's going to happen.
Of course.
But those people are going to be the same ones who are like, nah, I guess it's all right. You like that? It's a very weird thing. Am I wrong?
No, I think that it's really strange to travel as much as I am right now.
Because
I get the temperature
there?
Of so many different places. I was just in Canada. I tried to tell some jokes about, like, you should be okay with equal marriage. And they were literally like, can you stop talking about this? We are fine with this. And then right before that, I had been in Lexington, Kentucky, in Nashville, and
they're pretty hip, though.
Peoria, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And I understand, yeah, they're pretty hip, but at the same time, like, would it surprise you if I told you that people come up to me all the time and they're like, I've never met a gay person, I've never heard a gay person talk, in those cities even.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be surprising.
And then also, like, in
they've met them, but
Madison,
they
Wisconsin.
They've met them, but the fact that they didn't talk, or they didn't identify themselves, they've all met them.
Sure.
But
that's
know.
Their words.
Right.
Yeah, that's them saying, I've never met a gay person.
Well, that's great.
I didn't know any, I had no idea that.
Well, that's exactly why what you do is so important, is that it changes the dialogue, because eventually with gay marriage, it's just going to be like, oh, that we're going over to Bob and Bill's house.
I'm a human. Like, you know, like we're saying with my dad, it's like, I feel like I know what that person looks like,
because
that was me. That was my family. So I just feel like that's what they say, right? Is like, if you have gay people in your family, it obviously changes your perception. But it's also like, if you have gay people in your circle, in your sphere, in your world, if you've ever sat there and laughed at like some decently crafted jokes and personal stories. And I try to be like a little bit sexy about it too, but not in like a way where it's sexy for men. Like I try to be like, this is a, you know, like I'm a fully developed person and I'm happy about this and there's a sexy element to it. Like
and
I'm
it's not
neutered.
For you. It's It's mine.
Yeah.
But I think that's exactly why it's why the dialogue is important, because, you know, what that speaks to is when people in these places say, I've never heard a gay person talk or I've never met a gay person. That means that, you know, if anything is still existing, it's a closet. And in that people feel like it'll be a liability to be, you know, out or even own it publicly. And that's a shame. And that's that sort of has to change in order for people to go through what your parents went through.
Absolutely. I think that does have to change. And I also think that
the reason
that that exists is because the jokes have evolved, but the shame is still there. You know, like
on both parts, I think there's still like a weird lack of understanding, and there's still shame on the part of people that are in the closet or living a secret life. Because they feel, but I imagine that, you know, overcoming that fear, that's where I think, I don't know if it's still a schism about, you know, a gay person's responsibility to be out or not. It's still a personal choice, but there are definitely people that think you have to be out.
I feel like it is important because you have to think about the larger picture of the world. You have to think about the generations after us.
Yeah, but some people are sort of like not in the same way that they don't want to go to the soup line or go, you know, hand out the the vaccines.
Yeah.
They're like, well, it's not on me.
I know. I mean, I don't know if you remember when like Jodie Foster got a Lifetime Achievement Award at, I think the Golden Globes,
was it?
And she got up on stage and she said like she didn't want to talk about her personal life. So she got really close to saying the word gay, but she didn't say it.
But
at the same time, she talked about her mother. She pointed to her kids. She talked about her relationship with Robert Downey Jr., who introduced her.
And Mel Gibson,
Yeah. She talked about her life. And so I guess it's like, it's not more personal than that. Like, I don't want to know, you know, anything else about, it's not my right to know anything else about what's going on with you. I don't need to know anything about your recent relationship and marriage with Alexandra Hedison, because I am up on my shit. But, you know.
Right.
You could just say that you're gay, because that's the same thing as saying you have a mom. Like, you have a mom and you're also a gay person.
But there's, I guess, in that way, the non-loaded or non-sort of like compliant way to say it is like, you know, my partner, whoever it is, if I were gay, it'd be like, my partner John and I were just at the thing. Like, I don't know if you have to say like...
I still think the word gay is really important. I use the word lesbian on stage because I think it's really important to use the word lesbian. I know that's...
I'll start using it.
Yeah, I think people still think like, oh, if somebody calls you... If somebody says to me, I will sometimes be like, hey guys, it's great to see you, to obviously gay women in the audience, and people will laugh like I was slamming them.
Right.
And then I have to be like, you guys, no.
Yeah.
This is fine. It's fine that I know those are the gay women. Like, that's fine. That's okay.
It's not a joke.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm like totally chill with it.
Well, they're just doing that because they're uncomfortable.
Right.
They don't feel like you're
like, why are they? I mean, I think
that's going to take a while.
I agree that it's going to take a while. I think
I don't think that's malicious. I think that, you know, anything requires an adjustment period.
No. I think a lot of it is not malicious. But I think what I'm talking about is just the little ways that we set people up to have more difficult lives.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, men, you know, being really confused about what gay male sexuality is. Yeah. Like how, like, heterosexual men feeling like gay or bi men are like after them, you know, like that there's going to be a recruitment process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole thing of a dude being like, I wouldn't suck a dick for $1 million.
Right.
Like that to me is the best example in the world about how confused men are about gay male sexuality. Nobody's going to pay you $1 million to suck their dick. I don't know how special you think your mouth is, but like, that's not happening. There's people that'll do that for free.
That's strutting. Yeah, exactly.
And so I just think like, as soon as we can get beyond that.
Oh, that's interesting. I never really framed it in the way that's some sort of, you know, misunderstanding. I think that's more of a sort of weird, aggressive, you know, I'm straight statement.
Right. But it's because like, it would be such a sacrifice. Like I wouldn't, it's like such a sacrifice. And I think it's just not understanding that like, gay men want to suck dicks.
Yeah.
Gay men want to suck dicks.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're not sad about it.
Yeah.
Because they're gay. So
right.
It's like,
yeah.
You don't have to imagine like, but what if I had to suck a dick? You yeah. like then
yeah.
that would be tough because you're
yeah.
straight.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thing.
You wouldn't like that. Yeah.
yeah
and totally.
It would probably cost $1 million.
Yeah. And that's totally fine. That's fine. Nobody wants you to do this. I don't know why you think people want you to do this. Nobody wants you to do anything you don't like.
Why are you even having that conversation yeah, with yourself? Exactly. Maybe you should suck a dick.
Just to see what your price
yeah.
range is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you might lower your price.
Yeah. yeah you might even do it for free.
you might do
Maybe
it for
that's
free.
Your biggest fear.
Yeah.
that you just want yeah. to suck dick for nothing.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, I watched the your appearance on Ferguson because I saw that it got a little press, and I do a vague amount of research. But you know, Leno was there as the guest, and Craig was there, and they brought you on, and then you know, you got into a situation that's very rare on television. And because I'm a comic, and because I saw it unfold, and you can watch it, I found it very touching. Like I was moved by it. You know, as a
I was too. Yeah,
I bet. I mean, it's really something that, you know, you chose. I don't think you saw it coming.
No, I did not.
It was like it was completely inappropriate for the situation.
Yes.
You're doing stand-up.
Yes.
You talk about denim. Leno's sitting there on the panel. You know, they're minding their own business.
And he stayed to watch me also, which like he didn't have to. You know,
right.
He could have left.
I thought it was really sort of outside of one weird thing he said. I thought it was a pretty decent appearance for him. Like he seemed comfortable.
Yeah.
But so you make a comment about denim, and then you make a comment about him wearing denim, and then I think Ferguson was the one that first shot back.
Yes.
And he's got no fucking boundaries, that guy. You know, and I like him. I've done his show. I got yeah. no problem with him. But all of a sudden, you're being heckled in a nice way on your first stand-up appearance on television.
yeah.
At the end of your set where you couldn't do your closer.
No, I couldn't do my closer.
So he heckles you.
Yeah.
And then Jay chimes in, and then I think it was an interesting call for him to bring you over. I think it was the right call.
Me too.
Like, he could have said, all right, go ahead and finish. But
no.
he knew.
I couldn't. How could I have possibly topped what was the moment?
But
you know
all,
what I mean?
Right.
We were in this moment where it's like, to do stand-up when you have a moment,
right?
Just stay with the moment.
I thought you did real good with that. I think that you reacted to them, and you gave it back to them, and you got a laugh, and it was all handled. It could have really went south.
Yeah.
If you freaked out.
I agree. I mean, I will tell you, in the moment, yeah. First of all, I was just, you know, you play to the other comics, right?
Sure.
That's who you want to love what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so, like, working in the line about Jay because he happened to be on the show, I was like, oh, I'm so excited I get to do this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then when Craig was interacting with me, it feels like heckling, but it also feels like kind of like a hazing thing.
Sure.
In a respectful Welcome. Way.
Right.
You know, like I love the hierarchy of stand-up.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things about it, like
yeah.
that you and I are not peers and
right.
I have to look up to you. And that's because, like, no, but I do. I believe
yeah.
that. Like, you put in the time, you pounded
well, you
the
have
pavement.
To have respect.
Yeah, respect is so.
Sure.
Is so important. It's like
right.
such a beautiful part of our career is,
yeah.
you know, the way that it's
not necessarily our nature.
No, no, but I love
right.
how
right.
we have this job that is like just completely irreverent
yeah.
and still we have so much reverence for each other. And
yeah.
like, that's such a cool thing about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when they,
yeah, when it comes right down to it, we do have reverence,
yeah.
you know, like maybe like, you know, talking to each other is like, nah, fuck that guy.
Right.
But still, you
we
know.
Could even hate each other's stuff.
Sure.
Like you can find another comic that you just like, I hate their stuff, but you can still respect their
right. And Leno certainly taken
their,
like, you know, he's like the Jesus of stand-ups. You know, like this guy was like the best stand-up in the world. Now
yeah.
you can't find one stand-up
he took
that
his
likes
licks.
Him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the fact that, well, it was just sort of interesting that like you showed up for it, you stayed in the present, you know, and they brought you over, and then you scored on the couch too next to them. And then they both get, you know, they're politely giving you your props, which you deserved at that moment. And it was something I'd never seen before, really.
I don't think anything like that has ever. Well, I'll also say, like, in terms of comedy, that's such a weird. It's so weird that a late night appearance would happen like that.
Yeah.
With the two hosts also. I don't actually know that. I can't imagine that happening again. I don't know how that would happen.
Oh, with Craig and Jay.
Like, there's two hosts,
right.
and then there's a first time performance,
Jay,
and
right.
like there's banter back and forth.
And Jay actually says, "You're the future."
Yeah, like
white men are out.
Yes,
old white men.
His last line is, "He goes, lesbians rule," and then it's just like worldwide pants. You
yeah,
know, like
yeah,
then
yeah,
the
yeah.
show is over,
yeah,
and this
yeah.
is on CBS. You
yeah.
know, like mainstream, the most mainstream network.
Yeah.
The fact that this is all happening
yeah.
is wild. But I also kind of thought I fucked up.
How so?
Because I thought that I deviated from like the script that I gave them and that they were going to be angry with me. I know this sounds so silly.
They fucked you up. They are the ones who threw you off.
I know, but like when I walked off stage, like I had so much fun in the moment. I was like, this is great. And yeah. The moment I walked off stage, I like went up to the guy who books it and I was just like, I'm so sorry.
Who, Bart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm so sorry about that. And he was like, he was like, are you kidding? That couldn't have been a better thing. So I think that was also a learning experience in realizing like that television can also be real.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I think when
it's great. And
when you're first doing stuff, it feels so unreal.
Well, like a lot of the guys now, like Craig, he's the loosest of them, but he'll get you off your marks. Like he was really the only guy that would have done that to you.
Absolutely.
Like, that was a unique situation.
Right.
But they're loosening it a little bit. It used to be really scripted, but now with the talk show, when you do panel, it's a little bit sort of like, yeah, just roll with it. I'm like, really?
That there can be some moments like that.
They love it. Yeah. They love it. It's like when that happens, it's almost like, hey, everyone's awake for a second. you know what I mean? They're just hoping that happens.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad it happened for you. And if people want to watch it, you can go find it. If you, Cameron Esposito Ferguson, I imagine you can find it, right?
Yeah, it's right up there on the old internet.
Well, I'm proud of you. You didn't disappoint me.
Oh, Mark Maron, thank you so much.
And it's great talking to you.
You have beautiful things in your bathroom. You have gorgeous male hair products in your bathroom. And everyone should know. No, he's got the right stuff.
Oh, come on.
You got the right stuff,
they're
baby.
They're all going to know everything. I like talking to her. She's solid, man. Solid. Solid act. Solid person. That's our show. Go to WTFpod.com/calendar. Check all those tour dates. I'm coming. I'm coming to you. What else? Get some justcoffee.coop at WTFpod.com. Get the WTF blend. I'll go a little kickback on that. A little on the back end of that for Uncle Marky. A few shekels coming my way. What else? Leave some comments. Get the app. Get the free app. Upgrade. Upgrade to the premium app. Listen to everything. Got a live show. I haven't done one of those in a while. Live show on Thursday, live from Podfest. I know that some of you find the guitar playing jarring, but I'm still enjoying my my new homemade pedal from Mae McDonough and Company.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Moin, wir sind die Footballerei. Ich bin Kutsche.
Ich bin Flo.
Und ich bin Daniel.
Wir sind aber noch viele mehr. In der Footballerei gibt es American Football Freischnauze, überwiegend die NFL, in ganz vielen verschiedenen Formaten. Da ist für alle was dabei.
Das Frühstücksei zum Beispiel gibt es jeden Montag ab 5 Uhr als Podcast. In der Saison natürlich mit den ersten Reaktionen auf die Spiele des Wochenendes und in der Offseason versorgen wir dich hier mit allen frischen News aus dem NFL-Kosmos.
Dazu gibt es die bunte Welt der NFL in Kutsches Zirkus, hochspannende Kriminalfälle bei Hall of Crime und das Thema der Woche während der Saison in der Footballerei. Show.
Also, wenn dich American Football fasziniert, wirst du die große Auswahl in der Footballerei lieben. Wir freuen uns auf dich.